to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Beautiful listeners, we are delighted to have our guest today talk about all kinds of interesting things. And here's what's fun about Carmen is that we have these overlapping lives, and yet Cheryl and I have never met her.
No.
And yet I'm sure as we go on into the interview, we're going to find that we probably have been at the same place at the same time, but we just didn't know the other person was there. So Cheryl, tell us about Carmen.
Well, I know Carmen Imes from my husband, Brian, who she was a guest on Pastor's Perspective. I think you called in on that one too, right?
Yeah, I did once in person, but Brian was out of town
okay.
that week. So the time that I was on with him was on via Zoom or whatever.
Right. So he could not stop talking about it. And he knew I did this podcast on Women Worth Knowing with Robin. And he's like, she's someone you've got to have. And one of the reasons I think that he was so taken with your testimony is the fact that you've always walked with Jesus and you knew kind of your destiny or what the Lord had for you from a young age. And that's really when I want to, you know, highlight it, especially we'll probably do two episodes, but this first episode, I really want to talk about that. So you were raised in a Christian home?
I was.
Okay. Take it away. Tell me all about it.
Yes. Yeah. So I was born in Colorado to Christian parents. My growing up context was mostly Americans of Dutch descent. And so I attended a Christian Reformed church. All of my both sets of grandparents and all my cousins were within a mile of our house. I mean, just everybody close by. And I attended the Christian school that was founded by the Christian Reformed Church. So most of my classmates were also Americans of Dutch descent and also with a strong biblical foundation. And that was my story growing up, just in constantly immersed in, you know, Christian school, in church several times a week for different activities. And I feel like for some people that ends up being something that pushes them away, like maybe an overfamiliarity with it makes them go looking elsewhere. But for me, it was always so captivating. I just wanted more.
That's so great.
I love that. So now Brian was mentioning at 9 years old, you knew. Is that true, or did he get a little confused?
Yeah.
Nope.
No, I think it might have been 8.
I can't wait to tell him.
I don't remember exactly what age it was, but we had missionaries who came to speak at our church, and my mom was pen pals with the wife. They were serving in Sierra Leone, West Africa, and they served us African groundnut stew at this kind of church dinner, and then followed by a slideshow of their work in Sierra Leone. And I remember very distinctly participating in the meal with a sense of, you know, I was in a very monocultural environment. Almost everybody I knew was a white American of Dutch descent. And I was kind of longing for seeing the world and encountering other cultures. But to eat this different food in my own church was a big deal to me. And then we walked over and sat in the chairs and watched the slideshow. And I distinctly remember the husband saying, we could really use more help. There's a lot of work to be done in Sierra Leone. We would love to have more of you join us. And I kind of looked around the room and I said to myself, these people aren't going to Africa. They have jobs and houses and children and cars, and it would be very complicated and difficult for them to leave, and they probably won't do it. But I kind of looked down at myself and went, you know, I'm unattached. I'm only 8 or 9 or whatever I was. Like, I actually could do this. I'm not tied down yet. And I made a decision right then that I wanted to live my life in such a way that I would not ever get to the point where I was too attached to life in the U.S. so that I couldn't answer God's call to take me anywhere.
That's amazing.
My husband and I have been married for 26 years, and we've moved 16 times.
Oh my goodness.
So I feel like maybe he should have known what I had vowed to the Lord before we signed on.
Heads up.
Because it has meant a lot of moves.
Okay. You know, I grew up in the church, Robin grew in the church, and we've had lots of friends, and you know, that have deconstructed their faith. Mm-hmm. And you know, no doubt you've seen or had friends that deconstructed, right? Because as you said, you know, it was so kind of, you know, mono, you know, chromatic almost.
Monocultural.
Yeah, yes, cultural. Yes. That was the word. Yeah, I knew it was a C, second part. Yes.
Yeah, I have watched people walk away from the faith, and I think for some of them, it's a longing for something more. Maybe there's been some kind of hurt or trauma in their childhood, and then that gets closely associated with the church where they came from. And when I look back on my life, there were plenty of traumas in our family and in our church community that could have pushed me away.
Mm-hmm.
But I always found that I could take refuge in the character of God, knowing that when the church didn't know what to do with us or mistreated us, or when someone close to me sinned against me or others, that was not a reflection of who God is.
So good.
That was a reflection of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I want to see the opposite of that, I have to move towards Jesus.
Mm.
And that really has been true for me all through my life. No matter how hard things get, I find comfort in Jesus. I find truth in Scripture. I think another thing that pushes people away is when they have deep questions about the Bible that they can't find answers to.
Right.
And maybe their church leaders are threatened by the kind of questions they ask. This is especially common in Sunday school when you have volunteer teachers who maybe haven't been theologically trained and don't know what to do with the questions and maybe are threatened by them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of shut it down. And kids often learn early on, okay, I guess it's not safe to ask my real questions here.
Mm-hmm.
And they take those questions outside the church trying to find answers.
Mm.
And I was blessed to have adults in my life who let me ask anything. And I have a really vivid memory. Again, I don't know how old I was, probably around that same zone, 8 or 9 years old, when I was sitting in church and looking at the only book I was allowed to look at, which was the Bible, and the only pictures in the Bible were the maps in the back.
Yeah.
So I was kind of studying the maps during the sermon,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed a New Testament map that had the city of Jericho on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think I found a typo in the Bible. Because I've heard the story about Jericho, and I know the walls fell down, and that was in the Old Testament. And there's no way it could still be here. Like, I think there's something wrong here. So this is, of course, before I knew there was a Jericho in the New Testament.
Right.
Jesus healed a blind man there. And all
yes,
that.
Excellent.
But in
yes.
my little brain, I had found a problem in the Bible. And so I brought that Bible with me after church when everybody's filing out and they're shaking the pastor's hand on their way out. I brought along that Bible and I said, I have a question, or I want to show you something. And he said, oh, stand right here and wait till I'm done greeting people, and then you can ask your question. So we let all the grown-ups go out, and then he kind of knelt down next to me and said, okay, what's your question? I said, well, I think I found a typo in the Bible, because look. And I showed him, and he said, well, that's an interesting question. And I don't know the answer to that, but I will find out. And the next Sunday when I came back, I waited nervously through the whole sermon. And at the end, as everyone was filing out, I went up to the pastor and I said, well, and he said, wait right here. I have an answer for you.
Mm.
We waited until everyone filed out. And then he knelt down and said, I looked in a great big book in my library about Jericho. And here's what I learned. And he explained to me the destruction of Jericho and how it was rebuilt a mile away many years later. And that it was in Jesus' day, a full bustling city that was built slightly off from the original location. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, it wasn't a typo, but also there's probably a lot more to know. And if there's a whole book just on Jericho, then there are places to look for answers. And so I think, you know, when I look back, it was like a seed was planted in me that if I have questions about the Bible, God can handle my questions, and there are places to look for good answers to those questions.
I think those things
helped.
To bring our listeners up to speed, what you are doing now is teaching Old Testament at Biola University.
Yes.
And so what a trajectory God took you on from those early seeds that were planted.
Tell us a little bit about how you ended up at Biola. You know, I mean, when last we saw you, it was Colorado.
Yes. Right. And so I grew up in Colorado. I decided to, you know, volunteer to be a missionary, felt a sense of confirmation from God that that's what he was calling me to do. And so I was looking for a place to study where I could train to be a missionary. And I ended up at Multnomah Bible College, Multnomah University in Oregon. So I went there, and it was my first semester. I was taking a class on Intro to Church Ministries that everyone was required to take. And it was basically a class on good teaching methods. Because the assumption was, if you're a Christian and you're going to Bible college, then even if you don't become a pastor, you'll probably teach Sunday school at some point, and you should learn how to do it well.
I like that.
And so we took this class, and we had a master teacher, and I was hooked. I said, this is it. I've got to be a teacher. I still imagined that I would exercise that vocation cross-culturally, but it was like something was awakened in me about teaching. I had a number of classmates, you know, girlfriends through my growing up years who were planning to be elementary school teachers, and that held no appeal to me whatsoever. I did not want to teach elementary school. I think in some ways, I just hadn't seen in action yet what I was to become, like what God wired me to do. Because as soon as I got to college, I saw people doing what I was wired to do, which is to teach young adults, not children, to teach them the Bible. What better book is there to teach? And so I found this love for scripture came together with a love for teaching. And so I began thinking in that direction. I met my husband, we got married and began pursuing missions together. We joined SIM, which is an interdenominational church planting mission, and ended up in the Philippines for 2.5 years.
Oh, wow.
And we were reaching out to a Muslim minority there. And the plan was to plant a church among Muslims and spend a lifetime doing it. But after 2.5 years, our mission invited us to go back to the headquarters in North Carolina and work there instead. And so we made a transition back to the States, which was precisely what I never wanted to do. I didn't want to be stuck in the States. I wanted to be cross-cultural. But it just became clear that we, you know, we're just trying to find the right fit for us and our mix of gifts and liabilities and personality and all of that. So we moved to Charlotte and began teaching there, not teaching, began working there. My husband worked out of the home office. I was raising 2 kids. At the time, and I started taking classes in seminary because Gordon Conwell Seminary had a campus next door to SIM's headquarters.
Yep.
And they gave a discount to SIM missionaries.
So
I thought, okay, this is for me. It's on sale. So I started taking classes, and you know, I'm Dutch. I mentioned that, right?
Right.
If you're Dutch, you're always looking for a sale.
That's right.
So, no, my Dutch friends say, if you're not Dutch, you're not much.
Oh.
They do say that, unfortunately. My grandmother says this too, and we're trying to get her to stop. Because it isn't true, of course. Anyway, I started on seminary classes, and immediately, like, both I and my professors knew that this is where I should be. And so I had a professor who pulled my husband aside and said, you need to make sure your wife gets a PhD. It's your responsibility to steward this. And so we knew kind of early on in my seminary time that this was the path for me. And I still thought I would end up teaching overseas. But by the time I finished my PhD at Wheaton College in Illinois, we were applying for jobs. Nothing had materialized yet. We went back to Oregon to be near family for a while. And then nothing opened up there to teach. And then I got a job in Canada at Prairie College.
Okay, we've already done like some of those moves that you were talking about. Yeah, I am seeing. I mean, when you said 16 moves, you weren't talking about like we moved a block over. I mean, we're talking, you know, Philippines, North Carolina, I mean, Canada.
Illinois, Oregon,
yes.
Canada, yep.
Talk about intercultural stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, some of the moves were, you know, just across town, but many of them were major. So in Oregon, I saw a job posting for the job in Canada, and I thought, well, that's random. I've never had aspirations of going to Alberta. And I don't know anybody there. It just felt really random. But I applied for the job, and within 6 weeks, I was on payroll.
Wow.
And one of the things we discovered in the process was that I was a Canadian citizen without knowing it.
No. No.
40 years old, finding out I was a dual citizen.
No.
So that really felt like God had this gift wrapped and ready for me,
right,
just waiting for the time I would need it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met with an immigration official, he's like, oh, I think you might be a citizen. And we looked into it, and sure enough, I was able to apply for my proof of citizenship, and it made immigration really easy for us. So we spent 4 wonderful years on the prairies of Alberta teaching Old Testament. And then partway through that time, Biola reached out and said, we have an opening. We would really like for you to apply.
All right. Now,
so here I am.
Yeah. Now, why Old Testament?
Oh, so I loved the Bible. I love the whole Bible. I'm really interested in the use of the Old Testament in the New Testament.
Yes.
But you couldn't really do a degree in both.
Right.
And so I had to choose. And for me, what I noticed is that people who struggle the most with the Bible have the most struggles with the Old Testament.
That's so true.
Mm. And I just thought, if I could help people overcome the barriers, for some people, there are barriers that are keeping them away from the faith that arise out of the Old Testament. And if I can help bridge that gap for them, it would be my joy. And that's what I get to do with my students at Biola. This is my 4th year here at Biola, and I teach probably about 2/3 of our students because I teach the big Old Testament survey class that everyone has to take.
I loved that class when I was at Biola. I had Dr. Mitchell.
Oh,
and
yes.
It was just like that, so different than going to church because of it being something you were studying, and all of the vividness of God's word coming to life in your imagination. And when you have a really good teacher, which obviously you are, because these students, that, you know, that there's that chance for you to spark that interest in them, and they realize God's so real. Look how these people trusted him then. I can trust him now.
Well, also, too, you grew up in the church, so you know what those questions are like. And, you know, as you kind of predicated all this, the fact that you want them to be able to ask those questions in a safe environment.
Yes.
And not be made, you know, to feel like they're, you know, in the middle of, you know, backsliding or.
Totally.
Or lack of faith,
I love having office hours with students where they bring their questions to me one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying something new this semester. I have coffee with Carmen on Wednesdays at 1:00. And I
want to sign
set up at a table outside, and anyone can just come and hang out with me. And sometimes we don't talk about anything weighty. It's just whatever students want to bring up. And sometimes it's very deeply theological or, you know, tricky, specific questions about the Bible. I love that. I just bring my Bible and I'm like, all right, where are we going today? And they bring me their questions and we were able to wrestle with it. And I love having the opportunity to demonstrate to them that it's okay to ask questions and that there are good answers, even if I personally don't know the best way to answer. I know where to look.
Right.
I can help them on that journey.
I love that. You know, speaking of your growing up years, it was interesting because we lived in England for 4 years, and it was at a very impressionable age, I think, for, you know, all of my kids. And we came back and they really had a struggle readjusting, which you wouldn't think that would happen, you know, with just 4 years in England. I mean, we spoke the same language. But I realized later, I was talking to a friend of mine who she ministers in Madrid, Spain, and she's, you know, American, and her kids were born in Madrid, you know, but they, you know, have American accents. And she was the first one to talk to me about a second culture children. And it was interesting because, you know, then I was talking to another friend who was Hispanic growing up in California, and saying that she never felt quite comfortable in the public school, but she never felt comfortable with her relatives in Mexico either. And she realized, wow, I really don't have a culture I really fit into. And it was interesting because the other day as I was contemplating all that, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm a second culture kid. And not because I lived in England, but you'll get what I'm saying. And I think Robin will too, but but I went to public school. And so here I am, my real life is Jesus and my Christian home and my church. And then I go out and these kids are speaking a language that I don't speak. And their priorities are so different than my priorities. And I, you know, anyone who went to public school with me thought I was really shy, which is you know, hilarious to those who know me at church because they saw a whole different side. But church was my home. Church is where I felt like this is where I'm understood. This is where I'm heard. And for me, it just dawned on me the other day, I am a second culture kid. And I would think even especially with your Dutch culture, we had when we were in Vista, we had a whole huge family, huge, and they were Indonesian and Dutch.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, you know, all related to each other and, you know, omas and ompas and, you know, it was, and they were in our church. They were amazing. But it's, again, you've got that kind of that double second culture. And I wonder sometimes if that prepares you for the mission field because
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me, because my church and my school were both the same cultural
niche,
that there was maybe more culture shock when I moved overseas.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yes.
Because everyone in my world kind of did things the same way, which was the right way to do it.
Right.
And of course, I was well raised, so I knew how to do it the right way. And so then to go somewhere where people are thinking about it, about any given issue from a totally different angle, it's a little decentering where you think like, well, but I know how this is supposed to work. I know what honesty looks like, or I know what hospitality looks like, or I know what a good work ethic looks like, but then it's all inside out in another context. And so I think it was an adjustment for me. And we had a really good language school that helped us kind of work through, did my neighbor just lie to me when she told me, you know, X, Y, or Z?
Right.
And then, oh no, she signaled to you that what she was saying to you, she wasn't sure about, but you missed her signal.
Oh, wow.
You know, like things, just different cultural kind of honor shame type things that we had to learn how to pick up on.
Yeah. I love that. I did an episode on, or a couple of them on Helen Rosevere, who was Dr. Helen Rosevere, who, you know, worked in Africa. And she said when she went there, the pastor who she loved of, you know, the area where she was with accused her of prejudice. And she said, I am not prejudiced in the least. You know, I wouldn't have given up my life and come down. And he said, you are prejudiced because you think your English ways are superior to our ways.
Yeah.
And he said, you're the most impatient woman. I love you, but you're so impatient. And so you think the best way is, you know, your efficiency. And she said she really had to re-examine everything that, you know, her priorities. And, you know, so I love that. You know, we're not going to have that much time. I want to ask a couple more questions, but I want to go into our second episode. And in our second episode, I really want to deal with some of the, what we'll call it is the most asked questions of these students and how you answer it because, and then, you know, how you find the answers too, because I think that, as you said, my growing up experiences, you know, I've always been one of those who said, why? And I was treated at times like I didn't have enough faith, or I wouldn't ask why, or that I was, you know, on the verge of backsliding. But I have found personally as a teacher, as a pastor's wife, or, you know, whatever else I am, that one of the most important questions, even in my personal study of the Bible, is to ask why. And I think that you have to have a lot of faith to feel safe asking why.
That's right.
And so I think that's like an incredible
And what a gift question. That you are providing to those students who know they can come to you and ask why and what and how and everything else. But how sweet, too, that the Lord took you through the time in the Philippines. And now I'm sure in your heart you have students who come from another country, the exchange students or the students that their grandparents are funding them to come, or, you know, I mean, there's, Viola has such a legacy, and for you to have the connection with those students, and your heart just goes out to them because, you know, they are now immersed in a culture different than what they grew up in. And you get to be one of those liaisons for them to welcome them
in. And they bring so many rich perspectives to the classroom that we all benefit from.
Yes.
So great to have international students here.
Yeah, I think it brings a deeper understanding, too, to the little nuances that we're talking about in the Old Testament, too. And, you know, someone will say, that's done in my culture. All right, that was part one with Carmen Imes. And now you see where we're going to go into a part two, because we love this. So
thank
don't
you for
forget.
Listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at wwk@cccm.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.